Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thone, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems, host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share an interview with the CEO of Green Screens, Don Salvucci Favier. In this specific episode, we talk about Ignite, a new product that Don and the team at Green Screens brought to Ignite. And we talk about the MVP and what goes into actually making an MVP, such as developing wireframes, showing the customer visuals, etc. Hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Don, thanks for coming onto 3PL Live the second time. I'm excited to have you. You're absolutely crushing it. Seeing Green Screens' growth over the last few years has been really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about a TIA debrief, how the show went, and then we'll kind of talk about the topic of the show for how you look at MVPs of new products and about like marketing, because I know you guys had a pretty big rollout. But for those folks that don't know you, would you mind just reintroducing yourself?
Sure, absolutely. And thanks for having me on the show again, Jeremy. I always love joining you. My name is Don Salvucci Favier. I am the CEO and Chief Product Officer at greenscreens.ai. For anybody who is not familiar with Green Screens and what we do, today we are providing machine learning based, big data and machine learning based predictive pricing for 3PLs and freight brokers.
Before we get into the TI thing, what exactly do you mean by predictive pricing? Could you give me like an example for like layman's terms?
Look, the way that most people, and I'm talking specifically about the spot market right now, and the way that people have historically looked at that is using some historical index, that there are several providers that give that type of information that tell them what the market did, right? What did the market do 3 days ago, a week ago, 30 days ago? What has been the trend? But there really haven't been any tools in the market that are truly predictive in that they are looking forward to tomorrow, next week, 2 weeks from now for shipments that need to move and what might the market be doing. Now, right now, we've been kind of bouncing at the bottom of the market for quite a bit. So that may seem less important, though it is not. Being truly predictive becomes particularly important as you look at things like seasonality, as you look at things like weather events, as you look at market shift, right? As I said, we've been bouncing at the bottom. We hope we're going to see a shift in the next quarter or so. And as that shift begins, right, those backwards looking indices will no longer be valid. But it's also production level things. We have seen instances where an individual shipper has doubled production at a facility and has therefore sucked all of the capacity that would normally exist out of a market. And pricing then will change quite dramatically and quickly based on that capacity being consumed and additional capacity needing to be pulled from other market areas. So that's really what I mean about predictive and really more dynamic.
If people aren't using something like Green Screen, would one path look like versus the other? I'm assuming the people that are using Green Screens are getting higher margins and just much more accurate kind of spot quote pricing. Is that the way to look at it?
Yeah, I mean, look, our product is really designed to maximize, to your point, accuracy, to maximize win rate, to at least protect margin, if not increase margin, right? And again, in the market such as it is today, it's difficult to make a promise of increasing margin, but certainly protecting or optimizing margin as best as it can be. And doing so in real time very quickly, right? Getting a response in seconds or sub-second response time. Whereas traditionally in the past, without a Green Screens, you know, if you think about somebody who is quoting a customer where there isn't a contracted rate, what are they going to do? Well, they may go look at historical data to see what they have themselves have paid, right, historically. They may go look at some other historical index that they're using to see what the market was doing recently or in the past. They may post the load to a load board and see what kind of bytes they get or see if any similar loads are posted. So that's kind of been the typical process. And sure, you know, or it's tribal knowledge, right? I price this lane all the time. I know what it should cost. So you can certainly still go through all of that, but that takes time, right? And we're finding more and more shippers and customers are programmed for instant gratification. They're really pushing more towards API connectivity or automation. So you don't really necessarily have the time to go through all of those iterations to kind of validate what you should be pricing something at to maintain your margin targets, you know, not be upside down on the load, make sure you're going to be able to find a carrier who will cover it with reliable service, right? And doing so instantaneously. So not only do we provide a full complement of user interface and API, but we're also working with a lot of our partners in the automation space, folks that are able to automate that entire quoting process by reading emails, by scraping load boards, by going out to shipper-specific load boards, pulling loads off, calling a Green Screens API, and instantaneously quoting those, right? So the more you quote, the more likely you are to win, right? I think you can't win business that you don't quote on. So it's really speed, efficiency, accuracy, right? And again, preserving, protecting margin that are the keys in maximizing win rate.
Love it. And you guys had a really great presence. Actually, every show, you guys always have a great presence. Celine does a great job marketing, and the whole team does. I really appreciate that you guys are all wearing like kind of bright green shirts and just always like have like a jersey or something cool with like a number on the back that usually is associated with like the number, I guess, with the employee, like when they started. So I think that you guys do a really good job of marketing. What did you think of as far as like TIA goes? It seems like to me, like there was a lot more new faces at TIA, and it just seemed like a lot more interesting than past years as far as like different demographics. What was your overall thoughts on it?
This year's TIA was phenomenal on multiple fronts, and thank you for the shout out to my marketing team. I agree with you. They do a phenomenal job, you know, keeping us noticeable in our outfits. This year we had baseball jerseys, so seasonally appropriate, and we just celebrated our fourth birthday. The numbers that we were wearing all were the year that we were founded, 20. So yes, they do a phenomenal job. So thank you for that. I don't know where we'd be without them, but the show in general was phenomenal on multiple fronts. I mean, TIA, this is our third TIA conference. They always do a great job putting on a good show, giving the vendors and the sponsors exposure, in addition to just our general presence on the exhibit floor and the way that we show up as, you know, in our uniform, if you will, to stand out. We moderated a session where I led a panel of three of our customers that talked about dynamic pricing. It was very well attended, a lot of interaction from the audience, which is not always the case with some of these panels. Generally like to prepare some seed questions in case the audience is silent and we hardly get to even touch our seed questions. So that's good. That's a good thing. This year, TIA introduced a media day, a day in advance, I guess during the golf tournament or just after the golf tournament, where they gave sponsors and exhibitors the opportunity to launch new products or make any other type of media announcement that they wanted to. So we got to take advantage of that. We were interviewed by TIA for future promotional, you know, just based on the panel that we did. There's so much opportunity that TIA really makes sponsorship and participation worthwhile, and just the people that attended, right? So some conferences you go to and you find that it is more vendors, right, that are in attendance. The ratio of vendors to actual operators is often unbalanced. And that is not the case at TIA. And that really speaks to the content that they put together, the quality of the show that they put together, the reputation that they have in the industry.
Yeah. How did you get people to start talking? Was it the topic that you guys were talking about? Because we actually participated as well, like a bit in a panel, and everyone seemed a little bit shy for some reason. I don't know why no one wanted to talk.
Well, I think part of it was the topic, right? So the topic, as you would expect, was AI and dynamic pricing. This was actually the second time that we presented this topic. And last year when we presented it, we had a customer, we had a partner who's on the quote automation side, and then we had another tech company. But the feedback we got from that session last year from the attendees was that they really were interested in more practical use cases and advice from those that have already taken this AI and dynamic pricing journey. So I had a fabulous panel, three of our customers, Mode Global, ITS, and Armstrong Transport Group, very well spoken, each representing kind of a different segment of the business or size of company. So it was LGI, Armstrong, and Mode. I messed that up. So LGI being kind of a small to mid-size or smaller to mid-size company, Mode Global and Armstrong, of course, much larger, but we had Jason Roberts really more representing the operations and digital transformation side, and then the CTO from Armstrong. So just giving really different perspectives effective. So I think it was just the content that they were offering to the audience was powerful. We did a good mix of a little bit of educational content slides, followed up with a question to the panelists to talk about their experience. And one of the things that we did early on that I think helped to break the ice and was actually a suggestion of one of my panelists was, let's try to get the audience involved early on. So even though we had audience poll questions, let's try to do some show of hands. Hey, we've just introduced ourselves and told you about us. Let us learn about you so that we can speak better to you directly. And I think that breaks the ice and gets people feeling a little bit more comfortable, right? When you start out that way and saying, okay, how many of you are freight brokers? How many of you are 3PLs? How many of you are carriers? Are there any brave shippers in the room, right? Doing things like that. It kind of just gets people, again, more comfortable.
That makes sense. Kind of getting people in that groove of maybe like engaging, if not. Let's talk a little bit about like an MVP, how you look at building MVPs for a product. I know you're a product person and you had a new product launch over at TIA that you guys were announcing. Could you tell us a little bit about that and like what goes into actually, I don't know how many months goes into like building a product or like how you look at it, but if you could just fill us in on that.
Yes, the product that we announced at TIA this year is called Green Screens Ignite, and it's really elevating our tool from being more of a transactional load-by-load tool to really putting an additional insight into the hands of the pricing management team or the sales management team, really focused around analyzing performance around win rate and margin and things like that. So specific to your question about what it takes to get to an MVP product, how long it takes really is dependent on what the product is, the level of customer involvement, customer feedback, and your own expertise in the area. For this particular process, it was really the culmination of over a year of effort, really working closely with our customers. And for this product, it started as, you know, we had customers that were asking us for some custom analytics and working with them to deliver those kind of on a one-off basis. But as we started getting more and more of those requests, we started believing that, you know, this is something that really should be productized, right? There is demand, there is a need in the market for that. So, you know, we spent probably at least, you know, 6 months or more talking to our customers, understanding their needs, understanding their data, because each of our customers has their own data analyst and a customer success manager, as well as our product manager getting involved in understanding their data, understanding their pain points, their business goals. And then, you know, first and foremost, trying to determine, okay, how can we service those needs with, you know, with the data we have and an additional product offering. So from there, you know, the next step is going to be obviously to define the business requirements at a high level, begin socializing that with the development team, both the front end and the back end development team. For us, normally we'll go right into wireframing a prototype of what the user experience might look like, because I truly believe from my past experience that, you know, you can talk to somebody about something and ask them what they need all day, but until they can visualize something, that's when you're really going to get the feedback, right? People have a really hard time telling you what they want or need, but they don't have a very hard time telling you what they don't want or what they don't need or what is missing, right? So we find that having something visual to put in front of them is really what drives the most valuable feedback. So, you know, from there, it's going to be another round of iteration of refining the requirements based on that customer feedback, going through and developing it. You know, obviously, then the development cycle is going to go through build and test. That's not it, right? I think the product is done, it's been tested, it's been vetted, it's ready to launch. But then there is a whole process that we go through around product launch, whether it is a brand new product like this one that we just launched, or whether it is a new release of product that has some major features in it. And its product launch process really has three legs to the stool, if you will. Is the product ready to sell? Is the product ready to implement? And is the product ready to deploy? And ready to sell is really, are all the marketing materials created? Do we understand what the message is to market this product? Does the message resonate, right? Does it make sense? Are we ready to go with that? Does the sales team have all the tools that they need? Is it available in the demo environment, right? All of those things. So that's ready to sell. right? And there's a lot that goes into that. The second piece ready to implement is, you know, the customer success team has been trained, the data analysts have been trained, the integration partners have been notified as required about any of that, right? So that when we announce this product, hopefully we're going to have people raising their hand and signing up and saying, yep, sign me up, I want this. If we're not ready to start deploying it right away, that just makes us look really bad, right? So ready to sell, ready to implement, and then ready to deploy, which actually ready to deploy probably comes before any of those, which is, have we done a user acceptance testing? In this case, we did involve some customers in some UAT before we actually launched it to let them vet it for about 3 months before we launched it. Do we have our release notes complete? Has there been an advanced customer notification for any major UI facing changes or any major integration changes that they might need to be aware of?
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the ready to sell part, because it seems like until you know, how do you know exactly how to frame it? Are you just doing a lot of interviews with the clients to figure out like how they talk about it? Because I find like a lot of like the social proof that's always the best is always like when the clients talk about it, but that's usually after the product's kind of already out and they've used it and they're kind of talking about it in their own like lingo. So how do you like look at it before it's like something completely new and it's like hasn't been out yet?
I mean, that's part of our requirements gathering process, right? So as I said, you know, even before we've designed or committed anything to our roadmap, we've had a lot of those conversations with customers to understand what their pain points and their business goals are, and then how we are going to address them. Not just how we're going to address them from what fields, what integrations, what does the user interface look like, but what are the value points, right? What value are we going to provide by delivering this? So those things are pretty much known before we even start developing it. And I will tell you that our team has been working on the marketing for this product since probably, I don't know, the end of the third quarter last year, right? So understanding, you know, do we have the messaging right? Does this resonate? Is it relevant to the market? What are the speaking points? We created a teaser video, right, that we showed at the Media Day press conference and we're featuring in our booth and have since put up on LinkedIn. What is our strategy, right? When are we going to announce it? Are we going to announce it in conjunction with a show we did for TIA? Are we going to do a press release? Do we want to give visibility under embargo to some of our media contacts, you know, transport topics, logistics management, JOC, right? All of that goes into the marketing. And we generally, for a major product release like this, will back that up at least a quarter before we expect to release it. So we as a company, this was the first of four new products we will launch this year. So our marketing team is really busy in addition to all of the event work that they do for us.
Yeah, you guys look like you've got a lot of stuff going on for products is no joke. What about like getting actual clients to like implement it and just like getting people that are already using the system to start, I guess, going back in? Is that some of the account manager's jobs, just out of curiosity? Because it seems like that part is also hard as a software provider. Like you could build something and sometimes people won't even use it even when you build it for some reason. Or not all everyone, but some people you obviously have that are early adopters and other people are a little bit slower for whatever reason.
Depending on the product and the size of the product and how new it is, there's different approaches with this. Again, we did engage some of our customers in the UAT process. Some customers have already been consuming some of these data insights, you know, on a smaller scale, right? On an ad hoc basis through, you know, we email them a report once a week or something like that. So we've already verified the demand ahead of time, right? And have kind of tested the price points through conversations with some of our customers. Obviously, the first audience that we're going to target this to is our existing customers, because this particular product is an add-on to our existing. So you have to have our core product. It's not a standalone offering. That is who is being targeted first. And to answer your question, that is really first and foremost going through our customer success team. So they are the first that will be offering this to our existing customers. But in conjunction with that, our sales team is also offering it. And we really believe that this could move the needle on some opportunities that are currently in our sales pipeline, mostly because this is truly a one-of-a-kind offering, right? There is nothing else in the market today that does this. So we've added another level of differentiation to our offering by introducing this new product.
What do you guys find that like shortens the sales cycle on your side? Would it be just like referrals is obviously something that helps? Like what is something that you find that has caused, because you guys have a bit of a buzz for, and I don't know how people create buzzes. I think it's probably the right product, the right team, the right time, all sorts of kind of factors probably go into that. But have you found any other things that sort of like are able to like shorten the overall sales cycle for you guys?
Yeah, so I will say all of the above on those things. But, you know, look, we just because of the market conditions, sales cycles have definitely elongated over the past 18 months. But as far as where that can be accelerated, I think customer advocacy is the biggest thing. And when we were at TIA, I had the president of a prospect, you know, ask me, what are you most proud of? My answer was, we have a lot to be proud of. But what I am most proud of is when I hear our customers speak about not only our product, but about our people. We had a lot of activity at our booth, as we normally do. And I would say at least half of that was other customers bringing their peers in the industry to our booth and saying, you must talk to these people. Customer referrals, customer introductions. We recorded at least 10 customer video testimonials in our booth at the conference. And frankly, that's what is most exciting to me right now. And I think that is really what helps to sell the product the most, is just, you know, having that customer advocacy. And again, that panel that I moderated, right, at TIA, it was our actual customers speaking about their experience, both positive and negative. I mean, some of the questions that we asked were, what were some of your challenges around change management and things like that?
I like that. I feel like there's sometimes too, when you show both sides of the story, it makes it more believable, and people expect there to be bad stuff anyways when you're implementing a new product. But I agree with everything you said too. I think that social proof is so big, and just getting people, that's really cool that you guys got 10 interviews going on at the booth. And I saw Celine cruising around too with like a sign too that she was taking pictures with. Yeah, yes. I will say that you guys do a really good job of like standing out and doing things differently. I see a lot of companies just wearing sort of like the same Nike polo shirts that are very like boring and monotonous and almost like not standing out at all. Like it's just like everyone wants to blend in to some sort of degree with one another, which I don't really understand as a marketer, because it seems to me like it would be smarter to stand out to some sort of degree, because why look like everyone else?
Well, and you know, that actually was a happy accident for us. That, you know, I wish I could say that that was intentional, but it wasn't. And it started at the TIA conference in 2023. So last year, we had the thought that the last night, our last day of the conference, the, you know, the resort it was at was kind of Polynesian themed. Let's wear Hawaiian shirts in the booth for the last day. So we did that and it was fun and got a lot of comments on it, but that was it. It was intended to be kind of a one and done. Okay, that was fun. And then the next time we showed up at a conference, people were like, wait, why aren't you wearing Hawaiian shirts? And that kind of gave birth to it. We were like, oh, okay, well, we need to do this. So now we have 4 different Hawaiian shirts that are in rotation. One of them branded when we did Manifest, which was the week of the Super Bowl. That's when we had the football jerseys created, that the numbers on the shirts were employee number. Or at least U.S. employee number. And then most recently, as I said, we did the baseball jerseys, spring season, right? Baseball. And we just celebrated our anniversary. So that was the number that was on it. But it was an accident, but we did realize how much we were standing out in doing that. And look, we generally bring a large group of our staff to these things. And we tend to roll together, right? Like a gang a little bit. So when we're in these bright colors or just something very different and we're rolling together and we're easy to find each other too. Like, where are my people? Oh, wait, there they are. There's the Hawaiian shirt. So it's multi-purpose.
I love that story. And I think that sometimes the accidents do happen to make something more interesting. I'm just curious too on your thoughts of like, I feel like a lot of people are worried about putting themselves out there. And I think to some sort of degree, like where we're at right now with like social media, like the people that are really standing out are the people that are like getting in video, getting like writing content in general. Like, do you have any thoughts on that? Like, why do you think that's important for certain folks if they're like in sales or marketing or those roles to be in, I guess, to like learn to be more comfortable being, I guess, out in the public?
I do. And I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of OG and I am absolutely astounded by the power of social. And I, honestly, I believe that our social presence has been a huge part of the growth that we've seen over the past 3.5 years. Early on, social content was something that we worked with an external third party on. But as we've grown and we brought marketing more in-house, we actually have, you know, social media specialists on our staff that's what they do. I think you've seen where we're posting new content, if not daily, at least multiple times a week. Our entire leadership team has a pretty broad presence on a lot of the industry podcasts. We encourage our employees to post original content, right? So I think you're right on. I think particularly in our industry, the power of social is huge right now. And it's interesting because when I was at TIA, I had a conversation with one of my former colleagues from a previous job who was asking about, you know, you guys are everywhere. How are you getting out there? And I said, mostly LinkedIn, but social. And they were actually really, really surprised. You know, this particular person was a sales and marketing professional. Y'all need to do more of it, right? And you need to speak to your audience and in the tone of your audience. And you mentioned the sign that Celine was walking around with, hashtag no BS, just GS. That has really become our mantra over, let's say, I think we first introduced that at the F3 conference back in November. No BS, just green screens, right? And that speaks to your previous point about telling both sides of the story, right? It's not all rainbows and unicorns, right? There are going to be challenges, but you know, we're going to be honest with you. We're going to be upfront with you during the sales process, during the implementation process, in our marketing, right? We're going to speak to you. We're going to speak to your problems. We're going to do our best to speak to you in your voice.
Yeah, no, I think that just builds trust and credibility and authority, because when you do that, it makes me trust you. And if I trust you, then it's much easier for me to buy from you because you just buy from people you trust. But that makes a lot of sense. Is there any other closing thoughts you had before we wrap up the half hour?
Well, just related to that on trust. I mean, look, we since the beginning have marketed ourselves and our intention is to be a trusted advisor to our customers. And I know trusted advisor is a term that has been tossed around in our industry for a long time with not a lot to back it up sometimes. And that's really important to me and to us, is that we not only market ourselves as a trusted advisor, but we walk the walk as well.
That's totally fair. Where do people reach out, Dawn, if they want to learn more about you or Green Screens?
You can always find us on all of the social media platforms, X, Insta, LinkedIn, of course. I don't think we're on Facebook. We might be on Facebook. I should know that. Also, you can find us at our website, greenscreens.ai. Don't forget the AI. Or you can reach me at dawn@greenscreens.ai.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time, Dawn. It's always lovely speaking to you.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it. Look forward to coming back sometime.
Thanks for sticking around to the end of that episode with Dawn over at Green Screens. I always love talking to them and think they're a very creative team. Love all their jerseys and kind of the swag that they bring to the show. They had a really cool neon sign at this last one at the TIA as well. And I always do enjoy finding out what kind of how you figure out an MVP. Obviously, you need to know that the market, there's demand for it, which is important. And I also like that they figured out something that will differentiate the market for them as well. So very smart people over there at Green Screens. Definitely go check out their product if you're a 3PL Systems customer. We integrate with them. If you enjoy 3PL Live, the podcast, please review us on Spotify and Apple. It always helps the show. Other than that, have a great weekend. See ya.